The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter. Jason Peter under the helmet. With Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Elissa Walker-Campbell, we are back this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. And up next is our Under the Helmet segment with NFL and college football great from the University of Nebraska. He is joining us from Lincoln, Nebraska right now on the Western Company of Texas phone line. Always a pleasure to welcome in our good friend, Jason P. Jason Peter. How are you?
I'm good. If it wasn't for the 4 inches of snow that we're expecting up here today, I'd be thrilled. It went from about 50 degrees yesterday to now it's in the single digits. So there's definitely something going on. I think they might have something with this global warming.
It's crazy. We've had unseasonably warm weather down here in Fort Worth, up in the 70s, but we've gotten some rain later in the week. But Jason, let's move ahead. Let's talk about, you know, last week we delved in pretty heavily about the NFL labor issues and had quite a discussion about that. If we have time, if time allows, we'll go into that some more. But one of the big storylines that hit late last week was in college football. It really rocked college football. And that was coming out of Alabama, Auburn's most recognizable landmark. Two of its 130-year-old live oak trees were poisoned by this 62-year-old guy. What was your reaction to this story when you heard this come out?
Well, it's shocking, but it's also college football. And I think sometimes people get crazy mixed up with passionate. And this story, I think, falls a little bit under the crazy section. And when you look into this guy, Harvey Updike Jr., who allegedly poisoned those trees, you know, you see that three attorneys that initially had contact with him and were supposed to work on the case, they've all bowed out, and now he's on his fourth attorney. You know, he's named his kids Crimson Tide and Bear Bryant. So this guy is head over heels an Alabama fan. Now, hopefully this guy is past the reproduction phase, so hopefully we're not going to be looking at a Nick Saban Jr. as well coming into the family. But, yeah, this guy, you know, I guess there's reports he called in to Paul Feinbaum's show and admitted his guilt, but now he's, I guess, taking a stand, or his attorney is, that he did not call in, and maybe that was someone who was just pretending to be him.
Jason, we talk about it every week, about the emotion, the passion, when we hit on it and talk about college football, but we got to pray that there are no copycats. I mean, this is a guy that's got some serious mental issues.
Yeah, there's something there. I mean, you'd think if there was an incident like this, your first, I guess, reaction would be, well, had it been some college students from Alabama, not a 62-year-old man that has children. These are the things that you teach your children not to do. You know, try to raise them with good values and morals. And, you know, here he is firsthand taking the poison out to Toomer's Corner and poisoning these 130-year-old oak trees. It's crazy. But I think with every day and every season that college football becomes bigger and bigger, you know, I think you're going to hear more stories like this. This is the reason, I think, that people, not this in particular, but you can see why people love college football so much. There is a passion for it. And like I said, there's a difference between passion and crazy, but I think people do bleed their school colors. And, you know, going back as just as a former athlete, the differences between professional and collegiate sports, and I'm not the first person that said it, but in college, you have kids that play for the name on the front of the jersey, and in the pros, you have kids that play for the name on the back. And I think there's nothing like playing for your school and your school colors and your fans. It's not about how much you're being paid. It's almost about how much, you know, you want to be paid. You're going to work so darn hard because you want that opportunity to make money down the road playing the game that you love. But in the meantime, you're out of school, you're getting your education, you're having the time of your life, and there's nobody better in terms of fans than the ones that sit in those college stadiums from the East Coast to the West Coast.
Jason Peter with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. It is our Under the Helmet segment. We're talking about some of the biggest college football rivalries. And of course, we were just hitting on and talking about what had happened at Auburn University with the poisoning of two of those 130-year-old live oak trees. I guess, Jason, the good news is the rivalry between these schools are going to kind of set this aside. The leaders from both the universities are joining together to plant trees and to try somehow, some way to promote togetherness.
Yeah, I think they had a not only the, like you said, that they planted trees on both campuses, but I think at Auburn they had a tree hug rally.
I'm not a tree hugger, but okay.
Yeah, I know, me neither. Usually, I think you think of the Colorado fans out there in Boulder as connected to the tree huggers. But look, it could be worse, right? I mean, it could be like the case a couple of years ago when Saban had went back to LSU for the first time, and there was all that security that Saban needed because they, you know, he had had multiple threats on his life, and unfortunately. It was, I think, the night of the game, I believe it was an Alabama fan that shot and killed an LSU fan and his wife in an argument that happened after the game. So, I mean, there are lives at stake, and it all seems like everything is surrounding the SEC when you talk about these over-the-top type stories. I don't know if they'll certainly tell you that it's because they love their football so much, but I think other people looking on the outside in would say it's probably because you got some crazies living down there, and that's the reason why all these stories surround the SEC.
It's crazy, too. You just want to smack some of these people upside the head and say, can you get some perspective? And yes, we're very passionate about college football, but we're talking about real-life stuff now.
Yeah, I know, and you know, not to single out the SEC. I mean, there are cases everywhere, and I think every college coach who has had a job at one of these top schools where the fans do love their team, I think they've probably at some time or another dealt with some sort of criticism. I mean, I know here at Nebraska, it was just back in 2007 prior to Bo Pelini getting here when it was still Bill Callahan and Kevin Cosgrove, his defensive coordinator, had received multiple death threats, and his kids were getting threatened at school. And, you know, that's just stepping over the line. I mean, it really is. I can understand if you want to sit there and you want to boo the guy on Saturday afternoon, but you're talking about his 8-, 9-year-old, 11-year-old kids that go to school. I mean, what do they have to do with, you know, a linebacker not filling the right gap on Saturday or a defensive end getting hooked by a tight end? I mean, nothing at all. And you know, these kids are just innocent victims, and you know, they make going to school a thing that kids should love to do, especially at that age where you don't have any responsibilities in the world except getting your homework done. It makes it a living nightmare where they don't want to go to school. They don't want to see their friends, and you know, but there are crazies out there no matter where you are, and sooner or later when things get rough, usually they kind of come out of the woodworks, and I think they bring embarrassment to each and every university.
We're talking about college football rivalries. Just highlighted Alabama and Auburn, of course, the Iron Bowl that goes back to late 1800s, but also Texas-Oklahoma. We obviously know that very well. I mean, these two opponents, when they face each other, the hatred is at epic proportions. But I'm curious now, Jason, with Nebraska heading to the Big Ten Conference, obviously Michigan, Ohio State, not a lot of love lost between those two particular teams. Who do you think will be Nebraska's biggest rival in this new conference?
I think when you're talking about the hatred aspect of it, I think it will end up being Iowa. Obviously, it will all play itself out. And, you know, if both of these teams don't produce on Saturday, then nobody's going to care how much you dislike, you know, the neighboring state or you know, the team that you had a triple overtime game with. It doesn't really matter if you're not successful in the long run. But I think if Nebraska is successful and if Iowa is successful, then I think naturally it would be those two schools. There seems to be a dislike of Iowa fans for Nebraska. I guess they feel like they should have just as much notoriety and popularity as Nebraska fans do here in the Midwest. But, you know, you got to do that by winning conference championships and national championships, and that's something that, you know, they don't have a long history of doing. But I think when you look at a respect rivalry, I think a lot of people look at Wisconsin, at least here in Nebraska, as almost Nebraska's kind of little brother. They're another Big Red, you know, with Barry Alvarez being a guy that played here at Nebraska, and now having coached at Wisconsin and now being the athletic director. I do think that a lot of people look at Wisconsin like, if Nebraska doesn't win it, well, then we hope Wisconsin does.
You know, going back, I think back to the Big 8 days, it was Nebraska, Oklahoma with the big rivalry that's been so chronicled and told throughout the years. And then when you went to the Big 12 conference, it really wasn't that anymore. It was between you and Texas, correct?
It ended up being Texas, I think, more so because we had a tough time beating them, plain and simple. But it's hard to identify somebody as your rival when you don't play them every year. And I think that was the thing that people lost when the Big 12 came together and they said that we're not going to play this Nebraska-Oklahoma game every year. There was very much a great respect between those two schools, and Nebraska had that hatred rivalry with Colorado. There was a lot of Nebraska fans that didn't want to admit there was a rivalry with Colorado because they didn't feel that Colorado had done enough to be on that same level. But with Oklahoma, they had no problem with the history and the tradition of what they've done as a football program. But it just seems that the only rival that Nebraska really had as the Big 12 came and went what was Colorado, but that now, you know, with Colorado going to the Pac-10 and Nebraska going to the Big 10, that's another game that I think everybody is just going to have to say goodbye to. But I think the one that probably stings the most that we're not able to carry on is Nebraska-Oklahoma. And I've said this before, that I think with Coach Osborne as athletic director, I think if the Nebraska-Oklahoma game was a game that was still being played every single year, I don't think Nebraska is in the Big Ten. I think Coach Osborne has enough respect for Oklahoma, for the game of football, for the rivalry itself, to say that this game means that much to our fans that we'll stay here and we'll figure it out somehow.
And I think the ADs from both sides are committed to keeping that rivalry alive, Joe Castiglione and, of course, Tom Osborne, and they are going to try to make a point to schedule that at least every other year. Alyssa Walker-Campbell, along with you this weekend on the Big East Sports Show. We do want to pause and direct you to our radio website. That is eradiosports.com. And some of the good news coming out of Lincoln, Nebraska, 9 Huskers are set for the NFL Combine. Who are the Huskers, Jason? Kind of give us the X's and O's on this.
Well, I mean, the big name guy is Prince Amukamara, and he's the cornerback, big physical kid, really was one of those guys that benefited with Bo Pelini coming in here. For the past couple of years, you know, Nebraska defense has had a lot of success. And when you go back 2 years, I think a lot of the attention went to Ndamukong Suh and the defensive lines that Nebraska had here. But truth be told, I really thought that it was the secondary that was able to put that defensive line in great situations. And usually it's vice versa. Usually it's the defensive line that makes the corners and everybody else look good. But Prince is a guy that they're projecting as a top 10 pick. Obviously a lot will depend on how he runs. I don't think anybody's got a problem with how he looks, but let's face it. I mean, when you're talking about the NFL and you're talking about matching up on some of these great receivers that they have, you got to be able to run. So a lot of people are going to be looking to see how he does next week when he goes to Indianapolis and runs. But, you know, there's some other guys that will fit in somewhere. Eric Hag is another kid that... he played a number of positions from nickelback, you know, covering those guys in the slot to playing some safety and another guy, Alex Henry, who is our kicker punter, and he's almost like a folk hero here with some of the things that he's done. A kid that, and it's hard for me to say because I'm one of those guys that never really considered punters or kickers to be part of the team. They were always just, you know, in another part of the practice field, kind of looked like they were playing games for two and a half hours out there on the practice field. But he's a guy, you know, this kid was worthy of being the team MVP for the past 2 years with what he was able to do and some of the kicks that he made. But it'll be interesting to see how the NFL looks at him. I don't think he has a shot at punting, but I do think he's got a shot at kicking field goals in the NFL. So, you know, like you said, there's nine other guys. I would probably forget a couple guys if I tried to rattle them all off. But, you know, the big one certainly is Prince. But there's a bunch of other guys that will fit in there probably in the third and fourth round.
Well, it certainly is impressive. I mean, Nebraska, you guys are in position to have the most NFL draftees, I think, since 2001. In this NFL, this upcoming draft. So we'll look forward to that. But I am curious, Jason, I think it was in 96 or 97 that you were drafted. What was it like to participate in the combine? How do you prepare mentally and physically for that?
Well, I'll tell you, I went to the combine and also with my roommate, Grant Wistrom, and neither one of us worked out at the combine. We went and we did everything else, all the medical tests, all the mental, the questioning and taking tests and what have you. But, you know, part of our deal was, I'll speak for myself. I didn't want to go and run. We were the team that played the last in college football. We had played for the national championship being the last game.
Right.
And, you know, your body's spent, and you feel like, gosh, I need a little bit of time to get back into training mode. And not that you have the luxury of taking time off, especially when you're preparing to go to that next level and prepare to go to the draft. But I felt like I could go and maybe not perform at the level that I wanted to. You know, truth be told, it wasn't just my decision. I mean, I remember talking it over with Charlie McBride, who was the defense coordinator, and your agent and everybody else. You know, we had hometown visits where the pro days, where the NFL would come and test you at Nebraska or at Texas or whatever school you attended. We both made the decision that that's when we would end up running the 40 and doing all of those drills. You know, you only have to get me with a stopwatch once. you know, you might as well just just let us run at when we're at our best and when we've had a little bit of time to train. And we kind of knew that we were going to be picked in the top half of the first round. So we almost felt like maybe we earned that luxury of being able to not do those drills at the combine. And truth be told, there was a lot of guys that did it back then. I think nowadays, not that the money wasn't good back then, but I think now when you're talking about these guys in the top half of the first round signing for, you know, anywhere between $40 and $50 million signing bonus to, you know, the 15th pick probably gets $10 or $11 in signing bonus money now. You can understand why these guys want to go and get their names out there and make a name for themselves with these NFL scouts.
Jason, you talk about just, you know, the tests, the interviews, everything that you guys went through in the NFL Combine, but how much has it changed and evolved even over the past 10 years? I mean, what else are they required to do?
Well, I don't know if the actual testing or anything has changed, but just the act itself, the event itself. I mean, it's televised now, and this was something that the only way people found out what you ran or how high you jumped was if you told them when you got back. If you did a interview with a reporter or a radio station or a television station, now all you have to do is turn on the NFL channel and you can watch these guys. You can watch Prince Amukamara run his 40-yard dash. You can watch these guys do vertical jumps. I mean, they have interviews with these players before and after they run their 40-yard dashes. So it's just become a much bigger spectacle now. And that's not just with the combine. That's just in college football in general. I mean, it has become this part of people's lives now, where you have it affecting people, where they're poisoning 130-year-old oak trees, or they're taking the lives of people that attend you know, their rival school. I mean, it's just crazy. And so in a lot of ways, it has gotten bigger and better, so to speak.
Okay, we're going to shift avenues now. We also want to talk about some Nebraska baseball. While your team is off and running, a 3-1 start. Mike Anderson obviously doing a terrific job and coming off a win against Missouri State. In our first segment, we were visiting with TCU's head baseball coach, Jim Schlossnagel, and obviously they were projected as the number one team in the country in the preseason. What do we know about Nebraska baseball? You and I don't talk about it very often on the show.
Yeah, and probably good reason. They haven't been the best team lately. It's been since, I believe, 2005 when they won their last conference title. So Nebraska fans have been, they've been hungry, though. I'll give them that. And, you know, they feel like they should have a better product out on the field. They got themselves a new stadium built years ago. It's a beautiful stadium, Haymarket Park, and I guess fans just expect there to be something better, something for them to cheer at. So Mike Anderson is certainly on the hot seat, and this is a big year for him. But there's a lot of positive energy coming out of the Nebraska baseball program right now. Now, it's easy, I think, in the beginning of the year, because lots of times you're not playing. You're not playing your conference rivals, but you know, it's like football in the beginning of the season. A lot of teams, they're playing their Powderpuff schedule. They're playing the games to kind of work the kinks out. And same goes for baseball. Nebraska just finished down at the Texas State Tournament, and they played four games down there, and they won three and lost one. You know, part of that energy, I think, is coming from a friend of mine, a guy who was an all Big Eight punter at the time, Darren Erstead, who has been brought onto the staff at at Nebraska as a volunteer hitting coach. This is a guy who's had tremendous success in his playing career, and really, in my eyes, was brought on for more reasons than to just teach these guys how to hit a ball.
And he was had incredible success at the highest level. He was, a three-time Gold Glove winner, two-time All-Star, and how can we forget in, 95, he was the number one pick. Obviously had a very successful career.
Yeah, he was like a human highlight reel. I remember when he was playing on SportsCenter and all the highlight shows, the collisions that he would have at first at home plate, the way that he would go after a pop fly. I mean, literally selling his body out each and every play, and I think that's what he's trying to bring to these kids. We had we spent some time together, Darren and I, before baseball season started, and he had been able to spend some time with the kids, and he told me he was just shocked. He was shocked at the effort that the kids give and the way that they run to first base and you know, the little things. And the little things are what make teams great. And these kids just did not get it. And that was the thing that he said was, I think, the most disheartening for him, but the thing that he thought where there could be the most, I think, influence, or he could have the most influence, and where there could be maybe the greatest strides and the most room for improvement. And, you know, that's the thing that he's trying to connect with these kids. It's you play every play like it's your last, and it doesn't matter what sport you're in. I mean, that was the motto that we had when we won national championships in football, was everybody who was out on the field played that play like it was your last play, and then you move on to the next play, and you play that play like it's your last play. There was no time for loafing, because you never know when that play where you decide to loaf is going to have a dramatic impact on the game. And you know, you see it happen every time and usually every game in every sport. So he's excited about being back down there and working with these kids, and I think you're going to see a much different Nebraska baseball team than you have in years past.
And a different mindset, without a doubt, having someone like an all-star like Darren Arnstadt. Talk also about, you know, what a huge motivator this would be for your guys. The fact, you know, you got the College World Series, it's right there in your backyard in Omaha and in a brand new stadium this year.
Yeah, they, you know, it's kind of bittersweet with moving the World Series from Rosenblatt that has, gosh knows how much history and the tradition and the players that have come through there. I mean, it reads like a who's who in baseball, but you know, it's like every sport across the country, and it's about the corporate dollars. It's about those sky boxes, and you're seeing every professional team build a new stadium, or want to build a new stadium, or renovate their current stadium to provide the big luxury skyboxes, and that's where the big money is. And ultimately, that was something that was the deciding factor in moving the College World Series. Was they needed to put those luxury boxes in, and they built a beautiful, beautiful stadium, the TD Ameritrade Stadium down there in downtown Omaha. It's right next to the Quest Center, where hockey and basketball is played, and that's a beautiful stadium in its own right. But I'm excited, certainly, to attend this first year at the new stadium. But what a way for the stadium to be broken in, as if Nebraska could make it to the World Series. I wasn't around the last time Nebraska made it. It was back in 2005, and that was when, you know, Jabba Chamberlain was pitching, and they say the atmosphere in Rosenblatt was just electric.
Wow.
I mean, Nebraska baseball is not known as the premier sport in the state of Nebraska. It's about football. So to have a sport that you know, doesn't have as big a fan base, you know, to have everybody kind of catch that so-called fever They say it was second to none. And you hear stories about it, and I'd certainly love to be part of it if they could do it this year.
Well, they certainly are off to a great start, as I said in the open, 3-1 start, and we'll have to keep our eye on that. Jason, thanks so much for dropping by. We kept you long today, but always appreciate the conversation. We'll look forward to catching up next week.
All right. Take care, Alyssa.
You bet. We're going to step aside much more straight ahead here in just a moment.
The Big E Sports Show with Elissa Walker-Campbell is the biggest names in sports.
Delivering the insight.
Delivering the insight you won't find anywhere else.
Anywhere else.
Like TCU head football coach Gary Patterson.
Texas A&M great R.C. Slocum.
And Big E's regular guest of ESPN Radio, better known as the Double Nickel, Jason Peter. The Big E Sports Show
with Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Miss one episode and you miss the game.